Apple fixes a battery bug in the new MacBook Pros. Greenpeace gives Amazon an F and how not to raise your kids in a police state. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1680, recorded Tuesday, January 10th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about everything you need to know about technology today. It's been a busy day today, people. I mean, the biggest news, obviously in the world.
Top of the list.
Is that I've been using this Android Pixel phone.
Mm-hmm.
It works a lot like an iPhone, except not at all like an iPhone.
Yeah, some of your early tweets were very, like, I was worried. You were like, okay, I've given it enough time. What is there to like here?
Yeah.
I was like, no, there's something.
There's lots to like, but it's just different. What's to like better? What's better?
Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. By the way, I'm Jason.
Oh, I'm Megan.
Also Howell at the end of that Jason. That's Megan Maroney, and we're going to talk all about the Switch, the Twit Switch, as it is to be named at this point, a little bit later on.
Yes, but now let's get to today's news. Last month, Consumer Reports tested the new MacBook Pros, and for the first time, a MacBook failed to earn the recommended rating from the magazine due to wildly fluctuating battery life. Testing showed 3.75 hours of battery life and then 19.5 hours from the same laptop. Now, Apple says they fixed the bug that caused problems in Consumer Reports testing. During testing, the magazine turned off Safari's local cache for browsing, which triggered a bug in Safari's developer mode that Apple has now fixed. Consumer Reports is considering retesting the laptops. Now, Apple says the battery issue isn't something that consumers would have encountered anyway unless they were developers, and turning off local cache stores website snippets for quicker loading for developers, as I said. And Consumer Reports says that's how they test all their laptops all the time.
Right, yeah. So they turn off the cache basically so that it forces a reload of the page every single time it's visited. And I guess in essence, puts everything on an even playing field, right? So you can kind of test in that regard, I imagine, the true performance of the battery without kind of the software enhancements. The reality is, you know, most of the people that have these devices are going to keep that caching on because I imagine it's on by default. No one really has a reason to turn it on because it's hidden in developer mode. If they've been doing this all the time, but in this case, it showed wildly different results. Obviously, it seemed like a bug, and it really kind of felt like, I mean, even when Consumer Reports came out and said, you know, we can't recommend this. I mean, you had to know that Apple was going to do something and figure something out because, I mean, at least I have my wife's MacBook Pro to test it against. She's having great experience with battery performance. She has, you know, I keep waiting for that time where I hear her say, man, battery on this is really, fluctuates all over the place. And that just hasn't happened. So obviously it's a result of this bug that most people wouldn't see.
Does she love the touch bar as well?
She says, I don't know how deep she goes into the touch bar, but I mean, really, you're forced to use it in to a certain degree because, you know, function, escape, certain things come up. She says she likes it, though, and she's really digging the laptop. So, yeah. Mm. So there you go. That's the review from my wife. John McFarland, CEO and co-founder of Sonos, has resigned from his role with the company after 15 years at the top. McFarland says he had been planning to step aside for a while, but delayed the move when Amazon's Echo became such a surprise success. Patrick Spence, currently Sonos president, will then take over in the lead role. McFarland says he underestimated the Echo in the very beginning. Apparently, at that time, he was very focused also on some health issues with his wife, as well as his parents, who he says are aging. So there was a little bit of a distraction around this time, saw that Echo was such a big success and really felt like he needed to stick around to be to help kind of navigate through that. And now it's just time to step aside.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad for him, but I think no one really thought the Echo was going to be the success that it was going to be. But I mean, they made some changes. They had some better compatibility with Spotify and Apple Music, just not such a closed system. They have a devoted, enthusiastic audience. So,
yes,
I mean, just because he leaves doesn't mean, you know, doesn't spell doom and gloom for the company. I hope they stick around. But, you know, the comparison of the sound from the Sonos to the sound from an Amazon Echo, there's no comparison, right? So it makes you wonder, like, if everyone's buying the Echo, do people really care about audio quality as much as they used to?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, especially when you kind of put it side by side with the whole idea of, like, MP3, CD. You know, it ends up being kind of like this convenience feature factor as opposed to overall, you know, people's dedication to audio quality or fidelity or whatever. By and large, it really seems like a lot of, you know, most people are happy to let sound quality and that sort of stuff suffer if the trade-off is great with features and, you know, and convenience. And I think that's kind of, that's what you're seeing in a lot of competitors with Sonos, right? Sonos is expensive. Yes, the sound quality is there. Their hardware is top of the line, but you have really low cost, pretty close to as good options, like the Chromecast Audio, for example. We have three of those throughout our home. It does basically the same thing, given you've got a speaker in every room. You just plug it into the auxiliary input. It's like, what, $35? And it does the whole network connected, distributed throughout your home audio, which, in my opinion, was the really big key feature of the Sonos, aside from the sound quality. So, is the high price of the Sonos compared to the ridiculously low price of competitors, like, is that enough for that extra sound quality? Do people care that much?
Yeah, well, I don't know if they do. Greenpeace released its renewable energy report and says that Google, Apple, Facebook, they get some good marks in renewable energy, but Amazon lags behind. While the company promises to one day rely solely on renewable energy, right now the carbon impact of cloud computing from Amazon is substantial. Now, HBO, Netflix, and Hulu all received Fs for their amount of energy that they're using. When doling out grades, Greenpeace takes the following into consideration: transparency about the amount of energy a company uses, how much renewable energy commitments they have, energy efficiency, increased demand, their increased demand for dirty energy, renewable energy investments, and a lot more factors. So apparently, it's not Netflix and chill, it's Netflix and global warming. I worked on that joke all day, so please laugh.
All right.
Please clap.
I'll give you a couple of claps for that one. Streaming high-resolution video content especially in the amounts that these services are, high carbon footprint, a lot of energy being used, makes you wonder if, you know, maybe better compression algorithms can kind of help that, like what the greater effect something like that could be on something like a carbon footprint. I've just never thought of it in terms of that. In, you know, of like software, audio and video compression related into terms of carbon footprint. But that actually makes a heck of a lot of sense compared to what the report says here.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked at the numbers, but I mean, you know, all the Netflix movies that I watch at home versus driving to the movie theater, like, is that, you know,
how does that relate?
I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, and how often are you driving to the movie theater and all that sort of stuff? Facebook has dedicated itself pretty heavily into renewable energy. Their last five data centers were renewably powered. They've committed to 100% renewable. Actually, 20 internet companies, says in the report, it spells out, have now committed to 100% renewable energy. So obviously there's more to go. Well, that's a good point, Burke.
Oh, Burke Cam.
Burke Cam. We're going to need the Burke Cam for this one because he says, no, it's okay. It's kind of framed. Netflix DVD business, too. There's some carbon footprint impact there as well because of all the delivery that happens with the DVDs being
shipped
all over the place.
Too.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Well,
so
I always
everything
think,
has an impact.
I think of Netflix like keeping the Netflix DVD service, keeping like the post people alive, like the postmen and women. postal carriers.
You see a lot fewer. You see fewer and fewer of those little red envelopes nowadays.
Sad.
LG has had a bad year. Its flagship LG G5 didn't move the needle throughout 2016, and part of the reason could have been its bold but ultimately unsuccessful trial of modular functionality with its LG friends, as they were named. 2017 will be different, say LG. LG's announced, at least preliminarily announced, the G6, which will have a larger 5.7-inch QHD display with an unprecedented, a crazy aspect ratio of 18:9. So this is going to be a long display compared to competitors. LG says consumers want larger displays. So this is one way that LG is attempting to right the wrongs of the last flagship device.
That's just weird. It's just taller?
It'll be taller, but one thing that you may enjoy at some point with Android is the fact that you can easily do, and maybe you can do it on iOS, I don't know, but you can easily do split screen with in Android Nougat. Mm-hmm. Also, how do you say it, Nougat or Nougat?
I say Nougat. I still say Nougat.
Okay. All right. We'll see if we can work on that. So maybe the wider screen could be more beneficial in like multitasking environments, just mm-hmm. Trying to pull a use case out of it. But, put it in landscape. And maybe multi-screen ends up being better there. They also have reduced bezels because apparently that's a big thing in 2017. There's rumors that Apple with its iPhone is going to be pulling back significantly on the bezels. We've seen some other devices doing this whole bezel-less thing. Mm-hmm. So everybody's getting in that regard. But ultimately, it really seems like what the news is here is that LG's experiment with modularity did not work. And so they're pulling out of that race. And they're increasing the size of the screen again, saying people want bigger.
Yeah, so you can't do split screen on your iPhone. You can't. That's why we have iPads. This is the thing I'll introduce you to.
That's after a whole other device.
The iPhone.
I actually have.
Yeah. So there's. I mean. So is there like content specifically optimized for this new aspect ratio on the LG?
For the aspect ratio, I doubt it. I mean, if they've created their apps to kind of spec. For the system, then it really should scale regardless of that for the most part. I'm wondering how that might be treated in things like games and stuff, but I don't really think you see too much variation there. It might actually affect like widescreen video content, let's say. Possibly it might, result in an extra black bar on the sides of the top or the bottom where normally you wouldn't get that with a normalized ratio.
What I don't understand is, okay, so we have this Pixel phone. It's a perfectly good phone. It looks like an iPhone. It works. And so why do all these other Android phones like LG, like, oh, let's do modular. Let's do this. Let's make it taller. I think everybody just wants something taller. I mean, doesn't everyone just want a phone that's basically this size that has a battery that lasts as long as it possibly can and a good looking screen?
Well, I mean, but you got to differentiate yourself, right? Like that's the question. And that's that goes to the core of Android, kind of the ethos of Android is that there's a little something for everybody. Right. I mean, in the world of, and we're kind of a little off topic here, but in the world of iOS, I mean, you really have just a couple of sizes, and Apple has determined those for you, and you either get this or you get that. In Android, there's just so many devices, and how do you set yourself apart from the rest? Are you just another device? If they all look the same, then why would I choose to buy an LG device over a Samsung device? What is the thing that brings me to one or the other? Is it brand loyalty, or is it something else? And I think that's what they're always struggling with. They're always trying to figure out how they can one-up the other device and bring a feature that that a certain sector can't live without.
Right. You just like it because it's taller.
Yeah. I mean, I relate more okay. to it because
it's
taller.
Yeah.
I'm a tall guy. So, yeah.
Got it. Tesla Motors has poached another Apple employee. Chris Lattner, creator of the Swift programming language, is joining the electric car company as VP of Autopilot Software. He will replace Gina Hosen, who heads back to his original position as Vice President of Software at SpaceX. Lattner has spent more than a decade at Apple, before which he served as the lead author of the LLVM compiler infrastructure. So Tesla's got another Apple employee, which is great. I mean, they've been revamping Autopilot. Autopilot 2.0 is supposed to be fully autonomous. And as we heard last year, all new Teslas going forward will have the hardware to be fully autonomous. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's good that they've got someone good. I'm sure that Tim Cook is not pleased about it. But
yeah, but by all accounts, I mean, Lattner was an excellent, face for the company. Obviously, he developed all the way back, earliest versions of Swift, 2010, before it was, publicly announced in 2014. From what I was reading, the dev community is still kind of in a transition point with Swift. So I think this will be an interesting transition for him, being so closely tied to the product, to the language, and then transitioning out how that language develops from there, because it's not necessarily done. It's still kind of developing. It's still kind of evolving around the developer community. So, I wonder what that means for the development of the language at Apple, and how that will transition over there.
We will see. After the break, isn't it fabulous that we can track our children's every move with all this new technology? Molly McHugh from The Ringer says, maybe not so much. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, while at the same time supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that you can prepare in 40 minutes or even less. You can save time and money. I don't know if you know this, but shopping at the grocery store is 60% more expensive than ordering from Blue Apron. If you spend a lot of time eating out or you shop at high-end grocery chains, you can now spend under $10 per person for healthy home-cooked meals. You can also customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences, and then you choose a delivery option that fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. If you're going out of town, don't order your Blue Apron. Or if you're going out of town, order your Blue Apron, bring it with you so you can cook on vacation. It's great for that too. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. They set the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. Blue Apron not only supports a more sustainable food system, it supports happy and healthy families. Cooking together builds strong family bonds. And research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. New recipes are created every week by Blue Apron's culinary team, and they're not repeated within a year. Spicy shrimp and Korean rice cakes with cabbage and garlic piccata with scallion rice and chipotle pepper enchiladas with lime sour cream. All of that is part of some of the Blue Apron menus. Check out this week's menu and get your free 3 meals. That's free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Being a parent, it's no easy feat. Being a parent in this technology-obsessed day and age seems like it should make things easier, but that's not always the case. Joining us to discuss this is Molly McHugh from The Ringer. How's it going, Molly?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Awesome. It's great to have you back. You wrote how we are life-logging everything thanks to technology, which is so very true. What are some of the risks inherent with capturing and managing this kind of data when it comes to our children? I feel like I struggle with this. As a parent, I struggle with this. I don't know how involved with technology I'm supposed to be. What do you think?
So I started getting interested in this when I was like talking to my friends who are having kids now and looking at like all of the very different things available to them. And it seems so overwhelming. Like being a parent seems really hard just picking out like their clothes. And then you have to talk about like, well, what data tracker should I get? And so I started talking to some experts about it, and there's a lot of risks. I mean, there's the risk of being too obsessed with your kids. There's the risk of being so into the technology that you are actually paying more attention to the data than your child. So it can cause a disconnect. It can cause like lack of trust as they grow up. It's just not a thing we think about because, I mean, when I was growing up, nobody was monitoring me that closely. So I don't know what that's like. And these kids will know exactly what it's like to be watched from birth potentially.
Yeah, it's like when we were growing up, parents more or less parents always have the the child's best interest in at heart, let's say, and want to keep the kids safe and that sort of stuff. When we were growing up, our parents were no different in that regard. It's just now we have access to the ability to track every minute detail, to have live streaming, cameras of our home when we're away so we can still keep tabs on them. I mean, I guess the big question is what kind of long-term effects this has. Is that a question that we can even answer at this point? Because it feels so modern. It feels so fresh.
I mean, we can start to talk about it. And that's kind of what I was trying to do, is ask, like, what are all these kids who are going to be monitored from, like, maybe even before they were born? What are they going to be like?
Right.
And some of the people I talked to said things like, they are going to be more immature, a little more passive, less autonomous, perhaps, and have maybe some problems trusting people who are older than them because they're just used to being watched. So all of that seems really bad. And then at the same time, you're going to have parents who catch illnesses in their children before they knew what was actually going on, or they're able to identify sleep problems, or maybe kids who have special needs are able to use technology to communicate better. So, I mean, with everything, we have a lot of benefits too. It's just interesting that we're usually, it's just ourselves we're messing up potentially, or we're taking on. And in this case, it's like a whole nother generation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the rate at which it's changing, the speed at which things are changing is amazing. I mean, just reading through your piece, you talk about how when you got in trouble because you got caught because you left behind a printout of Google Maps when you were going to sneak out somewhere and an AIM chat window, which like sounds old fashioned.
Yeah, but at least it wasn't MapQuest.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I know. My parents were great about participating in this article. I was definitely not like a bad kid, but I did stupid stuff. And then I would leave my little, like at the time, high tech trail behind and get myself caught. Kids, the other thing I talked to some people about that didn't even make it into the article was kind of like, teenagers are always going to learn how to circumvent technology, and they'll get caught, but we always adapt. And I'm sure if I were a teenager today, it would have been harder to get away with some of the stuff I did, but I'm sure I would have found a way, which I'm still very sorry to my parents for.
Yeah. I mean, I think that in a lot of ways, I like to believe this as a parent of teenagers and tweenagers. I like to believe that nothing's changed. I mean, that a lot has changed, but really at the heart, nothing's changed. And like what you're saying about, autonomy and trust, like those are things that the parents have always wanted to instill in their children. And, we can look at the good as well that technology has brought. I mean, a lot of people talk about sexting, for example. You throw that term around and like how damaging it could be to a girl to send a picture of herself and get it, get forwarded everywhere. And that's embarrassing and horrible. But if you think about like in my parents' day or my grandparents' day, like if something happened and they got pregnant, they had to marry that person and live the rest of their life, which is, more of a consequence. Right. So I think I like to believe that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Am I fooling myself?
That's like a really positive view to take, and hopefully you're right. And I don't think it's the normal amount of tracking stuff. Like I'm sure having Find My Friends on to see where your teenager is going is fine, versus like having some sort of chip implanted in your arm that starts tracking your child's breathing movements from the time of like conception and then logging spreadsheets of everything for the rest of their lives. I think the extreme of this, which we have the potential to get into the more we get obsessed with quantified self, that is where we start to like maybe go off the deep end on changing how people grow up to a really weird place.
Yeah, that's been my concern as I have a almost 7-year-old and then and almost 4-year-old, and over the years just kind of realizing that yes, technology exists to make our lives easier, and yes, I know as they get older, I will be tempted to do these things that are convenient with technology, things like tracking to make sure that they aren't going somewhere that they shouldn't be going to. But what kind of effect does that have on them as they develop? To into older, young adults or whatever, to be accepting of certain things that our generation and generations before are not. You know, this like constant direct surveillance of everything you do, feeling like everything that you do is being watched and under a microscope. If they're exposed to that from a very young age, yes, it was convenient and maybe it was a tool as a parent, but what are the long-term ramifications? That's the kind of stuff that I really get concerned with.
Yeah, and it was really interesting to talk about how just raising kids is a lot, it's really different than it used to be. You used to have a lot more people around you and you were around kids as a much younger adult. So babies were not as scary and confusing, which I can totally relate to. My dad is one of seven, so he was around babies all the time. I didn't hold a baby until I was, in my teens probably. And I only have a few kids with, or a few friends with kids. And so I'm not helping anybody raise their kids. And if I ever have kids, it's going to be this totally new thing. And I'm sure it's terrifying. And when people get scared, they, it's really nice to rely on a little app that tells you, your kid's fine and they're breathing and they're normal and their bed is monitoring them. So you don't worry. So I totally understand the motivation for doing it. But at the same time, yeah, it might not be so great for us. Maybe we should be communicating more, relying on people more, being closer to our families if we need help with our future generations of kids. But honestly, it's probably a combination of the two is the best way to do it, which it always is. It's just that we have a really hard time limiting ourselves when we get new fancy technology that tells us everything we could ever want to know.
For sure.
You also make some great points in your piece about what this kind of technology is doing to our memory, like, the life logging part of it, how many pictures we're taking and videos we're taking of our kids. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I thought that was that wasn't even something I planned on talking about until I was talking to Dr. Harvey Karp, who he developed the swaddling method. So he's a baby expert. He can make any baby stop crying.
I bow down to Harvey. I learned many, many tricks from Harvey.
I think a lot of parents really admire him.
Yes.
But he has a smart bed called Snoo that uses sound and movement to rock a baby back to sleep, that uses basically what he did in real life in bed form. But he was talking to me about how this data is more than just like charts and graphs and numbers now. Like, we see data and it actually triggers memories and nostalgia. And it's really precious to us, kind of in the way that pictures or videos become precious to us. And again, like, I'm not a parent, so seeing like a graph of my baby's first steps, I don't know how exciting that is yet. Seeing a video seems really exciting, but that becomes really important. And you don't want to like begrudge anyone for feeling connected to that kind of data. You probably just don't want them to become too reliant on it. And it's like it is with everything, live in the moment a little bit more. But it is interesting how attached we are to some of this stuff, how some of these data charts about, what our bodies and other people's bodies are doing.
Yeah, once the technology becomes more important than like the human connection aspect of being a parent with a child, then I think you're treading into dangerous long-term territory, I would imagine. I mean, we had a story, was it from CES? I can't remember when it was, but it was one of those smart assistants that will read a bedtime story to your infant in their crib. Like, it's meant to be like this companion / baby monitor next to your infant in their crib. And I'm like, okay, well, I get the reason behind it. I get why it exists and why someone thought, well, this is actually solving a problem that many parents have. I just get worried about like the long-term effects of, if you are an infant and you start your life and develop throughout year after year having this like connection with a robot, let's say, versus having overwhelmingly by comparison human connections, what that actually does. And I don't know, I think our kids need more human interaction, but maybe I'm old-fashioned.
That was a huge trend at CES. It was like the Google Home for kids. There were so many of them that were like, it will read your kid a bedtime story or help train them to sleep. Or you can record things like don't forget your backpack and all this stuff. And I thought it was a little weird to be sure. I see the use in it. I mean, it's kind of like using that big family calendar we all had to check our schedules when I was a kid.
Right.
But much more high tech. And then you start getting into like, well, when we're too dependent on it, you have like a weird robot nanny raising your kids, right? Like, isn't that, we're really close to that being what that is.
Yeah. Yeah, the Jetsons. It's the future.
Right.
Well, this is awesome. Molly McHugh with The Ringer. Thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us a little bit about this. Tell people where you want them to follow all your work online.
Yeah, I'm at I am Molly McHugh on Twitter, and you can find me on theringer.com.
Excellent. Thanks again, Molly. Thanks, Have a great night.
Great. Thanks, guys.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bill from Huntsville writes about our ongoing discussion of voice-activated devices for the home. He says, I received a Google Home as a Christmas present. I thought it would be convenient to control my TV by voice, so I bought a Harmony Hub. After several days of trying to use the Google Home and Harmony Hub via IFTTT, I gave up. I can turn the TV on and off by voice, but not much else. I've been reading about installing the Echo SW on Raspberry Pi. I have two, but I only have one dedicated. It's being used as a NAS right now. I went through the procedure to use my other Raspberry Pi as an Echo device. It was able to control the TV properly with voice commands. I can use it to change the channels, adjust volume, etc. The downside is that it doesn't listen for a trigger word, but I have to click on a button to start an action. Yesterday, I ordered an Echo Dot. The Google Home is not necessarily the loser, but for this one use, the Echo wins.
Yeah, and I was looking into it because I thought I had heard Google Home, Harmony Hub, not necessarily that they're compatible now, but that they would be in the future. And all I can come up with is this if this then that kind of connection, which enables it kind of. But, you know, there's a lot of hand-holding and setting up rules around if this and that and that sort of stuff. So I would hope, I would imagine at some point Google Home would have more broad kind of capabilities with something like the Harmony Hub. I actually have a Harmony Hub at home, so that would actually be pretty handy. But yeah, it's kind of a bummer. That deep integration is exactly what you want, especially that coupled with voice actions, because if you're sitting on your couch being a couch potato, last thing you want to have to do is go over to the thing and hit the button. And
exactly. I mean, the struggle is real.
Yeah, we've all been there.
But, you know, back in the early days of the Amazon Echo, we had to use IFTTT too. And in the early days, you know, I'm talking early 2015, those ancient times.
Oh, ancient.
And we've come a long
so
way
long
since
ago.
Then. So
yeah. Oof. Well, so there's hope.
There's hope.
Up next, 24 hours into hashtag TwitSwitch. How is it going? We'll talk all about it. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Mortgages aren't always the easiest thing to do, yet they're so appealing because at the other side of the mortgage is that awesome house that you can call your own, or maybe you need to refinance. You got to jump through some hoops in order to make that happen. It's not always the easiest process in the world, and finding that information could be difficult. Well, when it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, that's a big part of the whole process. It's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interest in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you won't waste time searching through those stacks of paperwork to find the information that you need to fill it all out and get the process moving. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan all in real time. That's going to allow you to make sure that you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. You can kind of play with the numbers and see what it comes up with. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. So skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online. That's at quickenloans.com/TNT. quickenloans.com/TNT, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. TNT's Fan of the Day is Herp Ballou, a repeat visitor to Fan of the Day territory on Instagram, who sent us this picture saying, oh, relaxing in the bunk of my private Boeing 747, catching up on the tech news. Private Boeing 747? Real? I mean, he's obviously there. Is it his? We'll never know.
I don't know.
We'll never know. We'll trust your word. Mm-hmm. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we'll find it.
It is a mere 24 hours into the thought experiment we're calling hashtag #TwitSwitch. Torture experiment. I don't know. Jason has my iPhone 7 Plus. I have his Pixel XL. So far, I cannot stop pressing the home button that is not there. Uh-huh. There is no home button.
See, and I don't like having a physical home button.
I'm sure I'll get used to it, and then you'll get used to it too. I've arranged my icons willy-nilly all over the screen.
Like haphazardly?
Just everywhere, because you can't do that over there on the iPhone.
Yeah, you're kind of locked in.
You put them wherever you want. They don't bounce, and it's amazing.
I've really done very little to curate anything. I've installed like a handful of apps, the apps that I absolutely need so far. I have yet to really sit down and like dive totally into customization. But Android offers a lot of levels of customization. So it'll be interesting to kind of compare the depth of that here.
And one thing I'm going to show you how to do, because one thing that causes me a lot of anxiety is those little red bubbles on your email and your Hangouts.
Oh, yeah.
I'll tell you how to get rid of those.
You've got 372 Google Voice messages.
Yeah, you don't need
You want to take a look at them right now? Do you?
We're going to turn those off for you because you don't need those. You don't need
They kind of stress me out a little bit. Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
You don't need that kind of stress. and I want to show you how iPhone gives you less stress.
So okay, good.
I also handed over my Series 2 Apple Watch to you.
What have I done? It is a rose gold Apple Watch.
Pink.
Pink. they call it rose gold, right?
Jason, it's called bros gold.
Bros gold? Okay. Bros gold. All right.
Thanks, Brian.
I can deal with that. Actually, it's a nice looking watch.
And in return, I got this beautiful Moto 360.
We're doing this.
Because I was getting the chills from not being able to, I was wearing the Apple Watch not paired to the phone, so it was recording all my activity, but it had nowhere to go. So I'm glad you have it now.
It was only a watch with the time on it at that point.
No, but I mean, it was worse than that. It was telling me how many calories that I burned, but that information had nowhere to go.
Oh, so it was just locked on the device. It could not transfer over to your phone.
It meant nothing.
So good and bad things. What are some of the things that you like so far in 20? Now, mind you, we won't do this every single day. We're going to check in on it here early and we'll check in over time.
Well, I do like the fingerprint sensor on the back, which I know is just not an Android thing, but that's a Pixel thing. I like that. It's like, you know, you can quickly unlock it. I do like that.
And there are other phones on Android that do that as well.
Okay.
Yep.
I like, as I said, the customization, being able to move things around. I like being able to use the voice activation to really just open up an app. You know, I just said play Tech News Today and it did.
Oh, nice. In Assistant? Is that what you...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I kept saying, giving the wake word to it over and over again. And that didn't always work. But but Siri doesn't either. But once I figured out that you can just press that.
You press and hold the home.
The home.
That bottom button.
What do you call that?
Yeah, that's the home button.
Home button.
Yeah.
But it's not a button. But neither is that really. So you press and hold it, and then you get Google. And then it's just like you're open up to a whole new world as opposed to Siri, that if I said play Tech News Today, I don't think she would know what to do.
Well, let's see. I'm very curious. Let's see. Play Tech News Today. Play Tech News Today.
Sorry, I couldn't find Play Tech News Today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, in my music, because it's looking for music.
Okay. Yeah, so it, I like.
Yeah, Google has the knowledge graph, so like some of that stuff, it'll parse it out and be like, oh, I know what you meant, because Tech News Today, it appears, is a podcast, not a music, so we would look over here, and sometimes it can cross-reference that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't love that when I was in Starbucks, it opened up and said, you're in Starbucks, download this app. Like, that felt a little bit creepy. But I didn't love the chat heads, those things.
Oh, yeah, the Facebook Messenger chat heads. Yeah, that's yes, exactly. Burke is moaning over there.
But you showed me how to get rid of
them. People either really like that or not. You can disable it, thankfully. But there's a whole class of apps that allow you to do that. And it's like it's a feature in some of the later versions of Android that allow apps to draw things over other apps. Thankfully, they give you controls and settings to say this app can do that, that app cannot. So you can kind of customize that.
So what the worst part of it so far is that I feel a little bit like a middle schooler. Like I'm sitting by the phone and like calling my friends like, did you call me? Like, oh, because I wasn't sure my phone was working. So I'm wondering if you call me, because that's how I feel with iMessage. Because when you send text messages to a phone that had been using iMessage, they don't go through at first almost all the time. And you have to send them again.
Oh, really?
So a lot of, it says send. It says retry or send as text message. And a lot of people just do that because they see, but a lot of people I've noticed have not. or a lot of people are just not contacting me anyway, and that's where you get back to the middle schooler, like, nobody's calling.
They would have contacted you, except the first message they got from you resulted in a green bubble, and they were like, oh, it's going to be like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they stopped.
Yeah. So that is the worst, just that transition from iMessage to regular message. That's the worst. And I definitely know that I haven't gotten some messages that are on, like, group messages.
That are hanging out.
They're just, you know, because, like, my husband and I are on the same group, and he gets it. I'm like, I didn't get that. So that's the worst after day one. What about you? What do you, likes and dislikes?
I went on a little Twitter rampage this morning, so most of this is kind of pulled from that. But speaker, like, I actually use speaker on my phone a lot because the stereo in my car is broken right now. I don't know when it's ever going to get fixed. Speaker on this sucker is super loud, and it's got a nice kind of volume to it, nice sound. Not distorted. I like that. The haptics, kind of like the vibration that you get out of this, has really impressed me. Like, super, I don't know, like, it feels meaningful and solid. Like, that the haptics, if the phone's in your pocket and you get a message, there is no denying that you got a message. That sucker vibrates, and, you know, almost to the point to where I feel like I have to turn it off sometimes because it's distracting, right? And I've had a lot of Android devices where I have the haptic feedback on, and it's still, like, it just blends in with everyday life because it's weak or it's just not as punchy or whatever the case. Also, the fact that when an alarm goes off, like, the haptics are timed with the music. Mm. So it's like it follows the tempo. It's almost like it acts like a subwoofer, which is really weird, totally unexpected, and sounds lame and ridiculous. But when it's in your hand or, you know, or on a table, it's kind of a strange effect that I actually really like.
So you like all the feels.
I like the feels. Yes, I'm big on design, right? Like, obviously, iPhone has a really great kind of tight design to it. 3D touch, I expected that to be like a feature that was like, whatever. And I actually really like it. I like the kind of the feel of pushing into something and getting another context. And a lot of times that extra context is what I'm expecting to find, even though I've never done it with that app before. Mm-hmm. So that's nice. Smooth transition, scrolling, all that kind of stuff, which has long been an iPhone, iOS kind of trademark, is that everything feels fluid and all that kind of stuff. I will say that on the Pixel, they've really, Google, and they even said this, they've gone through a lot with the hardware and the software to kind of minimize any kind of jerkiness and stuff. And so I don't feel it hardly at all with the Pixel, but you get that fluidity here, and I really like that. On the bad side, well, not bad, but the things that I don't necessarily care for as much, Touch ID, the fingerprint unlock, that sort of stuff, feels slow to me. And I know you mentioned it on the Pixel yesterday. You were like, oh, this is really fast. Mm-hmm. And I feel that here. I feel like it's slower than I expect it to be when I want to unlock or whatever. The full, you know, to the side home screen layout of icons where there is no app drawer, that's something that's just taking me some time to get used to, I suppose. I'll probably get used to it over time, but I prefer having a little bit more control over that stuff. There's deep level app integration that I miss here. And LastPass is a prime example of that. With LastPass on Android, it's very easy to have this, and it's actually what we were talking about earlier, the fill over the top of other apps. That's what allows it to do it in the OS level, is when I'm logging into an app on the phone, it will recognize an ID and password thing and pop up a window that connects to LastPass that says, we notice you're logging into Twitter. Is this the Twitter account you want to use? You tap it. It fills it into the app. It's all very seamless. On iOS, unless I'm using the browser, the Safari browser, which apparently it's integrated into, if I'm doing this with apps, I have to manually go hop back and forth and copy and paste, and it's a whole process. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that's less just about LastPass and more just about kind of like deeper app integration, kind of the capabilities that developers have to really customize at a deeper level on Android as opposed to on iOS. Mm-hmm. So that's a few things.
One thing I think that you might like also, I know you're a big fan of two-factor. Yeah. If you use Authy or LastPass Authenticator, you do it on your watch, which is good because then you're just tapping and you don't have to type in any numbers or anything. So
that's nice.
I recommend that.
All right.
I think we've done good so far.
And yeah, so far so good.
Some people say we're not going to last a whole month. And to those people, I say, you're wrong.
Because there's two of us. So even if one of us feels like we're going to get all week and be like, please, give me my phone back. The other one would be like, no.
Yeah. I'm not gonna. Mm-hmm. My accounts are on there. I'm not wiping it. Mm-hmm. This watch is never leaving my wrist. Mm-hmm. Ever. No, it'll be fun. This is gonna be a cool month.
Yeah, and find us on Twitter. Use the hashtag TwitSwitch if you have tips or you want to laugh at us or give us encouragement.
Or you want to laugh at us.
Yeah. Or suggestions.
Or laugh at us. And we'll check in on it. Probably not every day like we have the last couple of days, but we'll continue to check in on it from time to time. Real quick, Twit Store is now open. Check out new designs. We brought back some popular favorites. You can get t-shirts, you can get sweatshirts, all sorts of clothes with Twit logos and show logos. We've got show-specific gear and new designs being added every week. Just go to twit.tv/store and you can check in on that. There's a mug even. You can drink your coffee with a Twit logo on it. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
And if you like our show, why not subscribe? You can find all the ways to subscribe on your Pixel or on your iPhone 7 at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett, for the ones and the twos. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you tomorrow. I'm going to high five with the Apple Watch hand.
Oh.
Which is this one.